Dear listeners, and welcome to the first episode of Vahini series study circle. Now, what are Vahinis and how did they come about? The very first discourse recorded in the introductory volume of Satyasai Speaks, the first volume of Satyasai Speaks, it has the discourse that Bhagwan gave in 1953 on the occasion of Vijayadashami in Prashanthi Nilayam. It is one of the very first public discourses that Swami gave, and in it, Bhagwan says, all these days, I have been generally giving individual advice and giving answers to a particular person's questions. It is like the packets available in shops. But today, this speech is a new experience for you. I am addressing a gathering today. But even though it may be new to you, for me it is not new. Remember, this is almost the initial phase of Bhagwan giving public discourses. And that's why Swami is telling this speech is a new experience for you, but for me it is not new. And Bhagwan goes on to say, I have given advice to large gatherings before, though not in this appearance. Whenever Nirakara, the formless, becomes Sakara, the one with form, it has to fulfill the mission and it does so in various ways. But the one purpose, the re-education of man, persists, whatever be the era. So Bhagwan says very clearly that whenever God comes down in a human form, His purpose is re-education of man. And then Bhagwan goes to reveal the plan of the Satyasai Avatar, how the Satyasai Avatar intends to execute this work of re-education of man. And Bhagwan says, the first 16 years of this life have been, as I have often told you, the period when Balalila, the divine child sport, predominated. The next 16 is being spent mostly in mahimas or miracles in order to give you santosha, in order to give joy to this generation. So Bhagwan now is 27 years when he is giving this discourse, and the first 16 years is already over. It is in the next 16 years when Bhagwan is giving this message and saying that this next 16 is now being spent mostly in mahimas. And then Bhagwan says, yes, the mahimas give you joy, but joy and contentment are short-lived sensations. You have to catch that mood and make it a permanent position. You have to make it ananda. And then Bhagwan goes on to reveal the third 16 years of his life. And he says, after the 32nd year, you will see me active more and more in the task of upadesha, in spiritual instruction, teaching, erring humanity, and in directing the world along the path of satya, dharma, shanti and prema. Not that I am determined to exclude leela and mahima from my activity after that. I only mean that re-establishing dharma, correcting the crookedness of the human mind and guiding humanity back to sanatana dharma will be my task hereafter. So Bhagwan says, here he makes it very clear in this discourse that he gave in 1953, that after 32 years of his advent, he will move on to a different gear in terms of reforming the mind of man. And significantly, on the completion of 32 years of his earthly sojourn, in 1958, on the holy occasion of Shivaratri, Swami blessed the venture of a monthly magazine, the Sanatana Sarathi, which literally became the carrier of Swami's message. And reflecting on the name Sanatana Sarathi, Professor Kasturi, Swami's biographer and the first editor of Sanatana Sarathi, he writes, The name Sanatana Sarathi is a name full of fragrance of the Gita, and the Lord's role as the charioteer of whoever selects him as the guide. And the most beautiful aspect of the Sanatana Sarathi, and this is what is really a huge blessing for mankind. The most sterling aspect of the Sanatana Sarathi is that the Lord himself took the pen for this sacred periodical. Every month Bhagwan wrote an article, and he did it from 1958 without a stop, wherever he may be, in Parthi, in Vrindavan, or anywhere in India, till 1984. And every article was entitled as a Vahini. It started with Prema Vahini, the very first series of articles that Bhagwan wrote for the Sanatana Sarathi. Now, when you come to think of it, isn't this such an unparalleled blessing that the Lord conferred to people of this age of Kali Yuga? Because in no other age did the Lord himself write down his message. We always received his directions through a sage or a seer, a Valmiki or a Vyasa. Imagine, just imagine if he had the Bhagavad Gita written by Lord Krishna himself and not by a third party. Imagine having Lord Rama's life story in his own handwriting. Or even Shirdi Sai, if only he had left a diary of his daily divine discussions and discourses that he used to give in his darbar. What we have of Shirdi Sai today is just the last 10 years of his earthly life. How profound, how precious, and how reinvigorating would have been if we had in earlier eras the avatar document his message himself. Never before did the Lord himself take the stylus and systematically script his message month after month. And that, dear brothers and sisters, is the unimaginable blessing of the present age. We have his message in its purest form, directly from the source. So that is how we are today blessed with so many series of articles written by Swami. It started with Prema Vahini, which continued for 25 months till February 1960. Then Swami started Sandeha Nivarini in February 1962. It was Dharma Vahini after that, and then it moved on to Upanishad Vahini, Prashanti Vahini, Dhyana Vahini, Jnana Vahini, and so on. Bhagwan assiduously wrote week after week, and on the 21st year of the Sanatana Sarathi, in January 1979, Bhagwan started Satya Sai Vahini. In March 1981, Swami started Vidya Vahini. Interestingly, that was the year when Swami unfurled the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning. And after this, this stream of wisdom continued, even though Bhagwan now physically was very busy, because you had all the three campuses and Swami was spending so much time with the students, but still he continued to write. And Swami now put down Sutra Vahini. And finally, the last series Swami delighted the devotees with is the Leela Kaivalya Vahini, which ended in October 1984. For 26 years, indefatigably, Swami, no matter how busy his schedule was, he continued to send his message through Sanatana Sarathi. The Partha Sarathi became the Sanatana Sarathi of every person who came to his fold. And it is significant that the very first series of articles that Swami wrote for the Sanatana Sarathi was called Prema Vahini. Swami called it Prema Vahini. Well, this is the first time love was putting down his message, and what else could he have called it? As Professor Kasturi writes, how Swami himself had declared many years ago that you will not be wrong if you call me Prema Swarupa. And then this gifted biographer writes, I quote from the introduction of the Prema Vahini, today humanity can discover shanti or peace only through Prema, and for that task this book will be of immense help. While reading it, you are in touch with the very source of Prema. While translating its message into action, you are visibly led by the grace of the Lord Himself. While enjoying the thrill of sadhana prescribed here, you are responding to the majesty of the very ocean of mercy. Well, that's put very eloquently by Professor Kasturi, the blessed biographer of Bhagwan, and it only shows how profound and how precious this book is for all of us who are on the spiritual path. And at Radio Sai, we think that there can be no better way to understand his message and dwell on his direct writings than ruminate on the Vahini series. And that is the reason why, with prayers to Bhagwan, we begin today the first session of this Vahini series study circle. And by his grace, we plan to start with Prema Vahini. And joining me in this satsang today are brothers Sai Giridhar and K.M. Ganesh from Bhagwan's University in the Prashantinilam campus, and also Harishankar from the Sri Satya Sai Central Trust. So dear listeners, we begin this first session of Vahini CD Study Circle by listening to what Bhagwan has written in the first chapter, very first chapter of Prema Vahini. And my colleague Sunil, with his gifted voice, would read out the first paragraph, paragraph 1.1 of the Prema Vahini, and then we will begin our discussion. Yes, Brother Sunil.
Thank you, Bishop. I quote, "Compared to all other yugas, in this Kali age, there are ample ways to obtain viveka or discrimination. If one seeks education, there are plenty of educational institutions. Or if one is after money, there are enough avenues to work hard and acquire wealth. In spite of all these opportunities, man today is beset with so many troubles and has no peace and happiness." Unquote.
So that is the first paragraph of the Prema Vahini. So, Brother Sai Giridhar, what thoughts come to your mind? Swami is very clearly saying that there are so many opportunities today to attain this knowledge of discrimination. I mean, if you want education, you want wealth, whatever you want, you can get. But Swami is saying that today we are beset still with so many problems. We have no happiness. We have no peace.
Yeah, I think it is really the paradox of the present times. And there is no question about that. And this Swami has written like decades ago, literally.
Yes.
You know, and the situation has only seemed to have, you know, worsened and are pretty much the same. It's not changed much. So Swami, in his divine foresight, was able to tell mankind, you know, the direction in which they are progressing. Like, they will have enough resources, they will have enough opportunities, they will have everything that they want, but what they really aspire for, what does man want in every endeavor of his? Socrates says that happiness is the sole purpose and goal of life.
Yes.
And this has been the revelation or observation of all the philosophers and scientists for eons to come, if I may say so. Because even the Maharishis of Dwapar Yuga, you know, the Ramayana from the Trita Yuga, everything talks about happiness being the central purpose of human life. And somehow, when we have grown in resources, nevertheless, the question always arises whether we have lost track of why we actually went about developing these resources. Why have we developed the technology that we wanted? Why have we advanced in the various fields that we have advanced in? Have we lost sight of what really was the basic goal in mind of mankind?
Exactly.
In the whole affair?
That's right? What they say, that in the process of becoming, we forget the being. That's the main problem.
Very true.
Yes. I mean, we're losing track of where we are going, why we are going, right? And in fact, if you come to think of it, you know, what Swami is telling here is like this age is actually so much endowed. I mean, if you just look at the kind of advancements that we have, the kind of I mean, the kind of things that we are doing now, even 50 years ago, it was unimaginable.
Yeah, Bishu, imagine the very cushion which you are sitting on. This would have been a luxury which only the kings, the emperors enjoyed even 300, 400 years ago.
Yes. Absolutely.
And today it is so commonplace.
So common.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The this morning I was sipping tea and I was wondering, you know, it is advertised as something that only the emperors of China, they had the luxury of drinking this. And I was just thinking, I am sipping this so comfortably, you know, yes, without a second.
You felt like a king that time.
I mean, and you look at the connectivity today. I mean, yeah, it's really unimaginable, isn't it? The kind of connectivity we have today. I mean, 50 years ago, television was a wonder, and today it is ubiquitous. And yeah, and today someone can sit in one small corner of Africa and literally do business with every part of the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if you see the kind of progress that we have made, it's really phenomenal.
Yes.
It is even for us, it is all the time, we are all the time in awe at what we see around us today.
And yet that happiness, that meaning is elusive.
Yeah, and still.
Absolutely.
Still that is elusive. In fact, sometimes when you think of it, it's so strange, isn't it? I mean, as Giridhar was saying, Bhagwan also should always use the word Ananda Pipasi. Man is always Ananda Pipasi. I think man is all the time looking for, but
the problem is where he's looking for.
The Sustainable Development Solutions Network, which is a global initiative for the United Nations, they have been coming up with this World Happiness Report.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's people have awakened to this fact, and I would like to just kind of read one of their articles, the headlines of that, which goes like this on September 9, 2013. They say that this World Happiness Report, the report calls on policy makers to make happiness a key measure and target of development. I mean, this is happening at an international level. Global leaders and the United Nations is quickly recognizing that, mad development which is not really contributing to the happiness of people is kind of purposeless. And where are we going really? And certain aspects of the report are really amazing. For example, they say that in some important countries where we have seen substantial economic growth over the past century, I would say, especially like the United States, the average happiness has not risen despite strong economic growth.
Mm-hmm.
This they observed even during the economic growth in the period of 1950s and the 60s,
mm-hmm,
which was called the golden period of economic growth for the United States, and also more recently when there has been an upsurge in the economy in the past couple of decades as well. What they found is, even when the top quintile of income recipients experienced huge increase in their income, there was no growth in happiness.
No growth in happiness.
No growth in happiness. They have either remained the same or declined. Which means somehow they are all pointers to what Bhagwan was saying. That, you know, at the end of the day, whatever you endeavor is in search of happiness. You are seeking happiness. And no one, I am sure, in this world would do anything that would make them deliberately unhappy. Would you?
Yeah. I mean, we are all in quest of that, but somehow we are not attaining that. But still, we still don't seem to get it, perhaps.
And even as he was narrating, reading out from that report, I was thinking of the juxtaposed scenario which I read in a book called City of Joy, by an author called Dominic Lepage. So he is talking about life in a leper's colony, in a slum, in fact, in Calcutta.
Calcutta, yeah.
And he's narrating just one small incident of a festival that happened over there. And at that time, the kind of light that he saw in the eyes of the people over there, he said joy could be found even in such dismal surroundings. And it's completely opposite to the scenario which... So, you know, happiness is not a function of the income levels that you
or comforts,
enjoy, or the comforts
or
luxuries.
Or externalities, what we believe.
Yeah, that sums it up. So, so the quest for happiness still remains because we don't know where to look for it, as Brother Ganesh pointed out.
But also, today's younger generation, they feel to have happiness, you have to have something tangible.
Yeah.
See, when we talk philosophy, or even, I mean, to put it very frankly, if you say you have to seek happiness inside,
mm-hmm,
what they're what they ask is, it is not a tangible experience. Okay, outside you succeed, you achieve, you set a goal and you achieve and you feel successful and then you feel happy. So that seems to be tangible. So that's what they are asking. They are asking, okay, you are saying that
difficult to measure.
You are saying that you should not seek for happiness outside, but what we see outside is tangible. What we see inside is intangible. So you're telling us to search happiness in intangibility, which does not make sense, or even if it is true, if they are not experiencing it, you know, they give it up. Because today's world is, let us accept it frankly, is today's era is the era of instant gratification.
Yes.
What gives you immediate gratification?
Yes.
Because it is tangible.
Yes.
So this is a question. All that paradox we spoke about.
Yes.
Okay, it's because we are apparently achieving everything, but still I'm not, you know, still the happiness is eluding.
Absolutely.
At the same time, if you tell me that the happiness is inside, okay, then when I try to go inside, in whichever way, I'm not experiencing happiness. So I'm lost somewhere in middle, like a Trishanku, neither here, neither there.
I think the issue there is, when we experience the pleasures, I would rather say, call them pleasures, because Swami clearly delineates happiness from pleasure. And he says something which is very temporary in nature is pleasure, and something which is more lasting in nature is really what is happiness. The pleasures of life which we experience in our day-to-day life from the world is very easy, and we know how to get it, right? I understand when you say, you know, that it's possibly not so tangible when I say go within and seek happiness, when Swami says that, the obvious question is, how do I go within? Means, what does the process involve?
Yeah.
We really don't know that at some point of time, right? And possibly it is the lack of knowledge or clarity about what does it really mean to go inside and seek that happiness, which kind
that
of
has
puts
resulted
us
in the paradox.
Yeah, it makes it intangible, as he was saying.
And one more main problem is patience. It requires a lot of patience.
Absolutely.
And patience is one thing which nobody commonly
has. In fact,
has.
Someone very beautifully put down the paradox, you know, that we are talking about of our times.
That's Dr. Bob Moorhead, who was a pastor in the Overlay Christian Church in Redmond, Washington. He's also a PhD from the California School of Theology. This particular work that he has written, you know, The Paradox of Our Age, kind of really summarizes the situation that we have found. Like Ganesh just mentioned, while it is the experience of the world is readily available to us and very, very tangible, easily obtainable, it has led us to a situation which is again complex, which has still not resulted in sustained happiness, because otherwise we wouldn't be having this discussion right now, isn't it? So let's just read through the paradox of our age as observed by Bob. You know, he says, we have taller buildings, but shorter tempers, wider freeways, but narrower viewpoints. We spend more, but have less. We buy more, but enjoy it less. We have bigger houses and smaller families, more conveniences, yet less time. We have more degrees, but less sense. I would say common sense.
Yes.
More knowledge, but less judgment. More experts, yet more problems. We have more gadgets, but less satisfaction. More medicine, yet less wellness.
Yes.
He observes that people drink too much, smoke too much, spend too recklessly, laugh too little, drive too fast, get too angry, stay up too late, get up too tired, read too seldom, watch TV too much, and pray too seldom.
And he continues, we have multiplied our possessions, but reduced our values. We fly in faster planes to arrive there quicker, to do less, as less as possible, and return sooner. We talk too much, love too seldom, and lie too often. We have learned how to make a living, but not a life. We have added years to our life, not life to our years, to the years. We have been all the way to the moon and back, but have trouble crossing the street to meet the new neighbor.
How true is that?
And Jesus says, love thy neighbor.
Yes. Okay?
There's a profound truth in that. We have conquered our outer space, but not inner space. We have done larger things, but not better things. We have split the atom, but not our prejudice. We write more, but learn less. Plan more, but accomplish less. We learn to rush, but not to wait. We have more weapons, but less peace. Higher incomes, but lower morals. More parties, but less fun. More food, but less appeasement. More acquaintances, but fewer friends. More effort, but less success.
We build more computers to hold more information, to produce more copies than ever, but have less communication.
Yes.
Drive smaller cars that have bigger problems. Build larger factories that produce less. And this one is my favorite because Swami always stresses on this. We have become long on quantity, but short on quality.
Quality.
These are the times of fast foods and slow digestion. Tall men, but short character. Steep in profits, but shallow relationships. These are times of world peace, but domestic warfare. More leisure and less fun. Higher postage, but slower mail. I don't think the mail hardly exists these days at all now.
Yes.
More kinds of food, but less nutrition. It is time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room.
So everything seems to be a paradox now.
Everything is a paradox.
It's a paradox. So how do we come out of this paradox?
I mean, we have multiplied our positions, but somewhere we have lost our peace. Maybe we should go back to what Bhagwan says in Prema Vahini, because after Bhagwan mentions the condition of our times, then Bhagwan himself gives the diagnosis. Sunil, can you please read out paragraph 1.2 and 1.3?
Thank you. I quote, "Why is it so? What is the reason? The answer is man's behavior. Human birth is indeed the pinnacle of creation, but in order to live up to the sanctity of such an exalted human life, sacred pravartana or behavior is most important. And to acquire such a pravartana, gunam or character is vital. Even after one's death, what remains is man's swabhavam or character." End of quote. Now quote 1.3, quote, "Therefore, our character in daily life is our true strength. In this world, many consider knowledge to be the most powerful. That is not true. Character or gunam is strength. Without gunam, jnanam or wisdom cannot be obtained. Thus, one should have a perfect character or gunam. Why is it that Buddha, Christ, Shankaracharya, Vivekananda and such great saints and great devotees are remembered even till this day? It is because of swabhava and guna. In fact, wealth, knowledge and position, all of these are worthless before character or guna." Unquote.
So Swami very clearly tells us where the problem is. And brothers, before we go on discussing this, I thought let's listen to Bhagwan himself share about character, the importance of character. Sunil, can you play that clip?
Karnamayamainatuvanti hrudayamu ee naadu katina hrudayanga maaritu vachindi.
The human heart, which is so soft and tender, has become hard.
Karanam emiti?
Why?
Mana pravartane.
Our conduct is
desam yokka manchi chedalu ఆ దేశంలో ఉండేటువంటి ఒక స్త్రీ పురుషుల క్యారెక్టర్ పైన ఆధారపడి ఉంటుంటుంది.
The good and the bad of the country depends upon the behavior and actions of men and women.
కనుకనే మనము క్యారెక్టర్ పోతే మన లైఫ్ పోయినట్టే.
When once the character is lost, the life is gone.
If money lost, something is lost.
If money is lost, something is lost.
If health is lost, something is lost.
If health is lost, something is lost.
If character is lost, everything is lost.
If character is lost, everything is lost.
కనుకనే మన జీవితం లోపల దానినే బలంగా మనం తీసుకోవాలి.
Therefore, we should think of this character as most important.
నాటి నుండి నేటి వరకు భగవంతుడు ఆశించేటువంటిది అది ఒక్కటే.
That's what God expects from us then and now and forever.
కానీ మానవుడు ఈ సత్యాన్ని గుర్తించుకునలేక వ్యక్తిగతమైనటువంటి స్వార్థ సప్రయోజనములకై పాటుపడుతున్నాడు. మానవుని యందు ఈ స్వార్థము సప్రయోజనము నిర్మూలం కావాలి.
One has to kill the selfishness and self-interest.
All are one. Be alike to everyone.
All are one. Be alike to everyone.
అందరూ కూడా నువ్వు ఒక విశ్వమాన కుటుంబంలో మెంబర్స్.
All of us are members of this family of God.
So very clearly Bhagavan is telling that without character, whatever you may have achieved, everything is pointless. In fact, brothers, I'm reminded of that Chinnakatha that Swami used to narrate. Some used to talk about how Prahlada was not only a devotee of Narayana, but also a very righteous king. And Swami used to say that he was also the most bountiful of kings. He was very prosperous, and he would never say no to anyone who approached him for a favor or a gift or a help. And on one occasion, Lord Indra, he wanted to test Prahlada, so he came in the guise of a Brahmin. And Prahlada offered his respects to Lord Indra and he asked, "What do you seek of me? How can I make you happy?" And the Brahmin replies, "O king, I want you to gift me your Shila, your Shilam or your character." And Prahlada says, "So be it, your wish is fulfilled. I'm gifting my Shilam, my character to you." And so Lord Indra, the Brahmin, he leaves the court. And then something starts to unfold in the court. No sooner did the Brahmin leave, then a charming young man is seen walking away from the royal court. So Prahlada questions, "Sir, who are you?" And the man replies, "I am fame. I cannot stay with you any longer since character has left you." And Prahlada permits him to leave. And then the story goes, a few seconds later, another handsome person is seen walking away from the court. And Prahlada asks again, "May I know who you are?" He says, "I am valor. How can I be with you when character is not with you, fame is not with you? Therefore, I also have to go." Prahlada again is helpless and he allows him to leave. And soon, a charming lady now is leaving the court and she's going in hurried steps. So Prahlada asks her, "Mother, may I know who you are?" And she says, "I am Rajalakshmi. I am the presiding deity of this kingdom. I cannot live here where there is no character, no fame and no valor." And after this, there is another woman who is seen moving away and she is going away from the court with tears in her eyes. And Prahlada runs to her and asks, "Mother, may I know who you are?" And then she says, "Son, I am Dharma Devata. I am righteousness. I don't have a place where there is no character, where there is no fame, and where there is no valor. Even Rajalakshmi has left you. How can I be here?" And at this point, that Prahlada, Swami says, falls at her feet and says, "Mother, I cannot live without character. Maybe I can live probably without character, without fame, without valor, without Rajalakshmi. Maybe I can manage to live without all this, but I cannot live without Dharma. Your Dharma Devata, how can I allow you to go? Because it is the duty of the king to protect righteousness and Dharma is the basis of this entire world. If you go, then there will be nothing left of me. Please don't forsake me." And then Dharma Devata, listening to the prayer of Prahlada, agrees to stay. And when this happens, Swami says, all the others also return to the court. Because all of them say, "We cannot exist without you, Dharma Devata. So let us also be with you." So Bhagavan gives this very beautiful example just to show how character is so powerful. And once you lose character, you lose everything else.
And this is a message that Swami would emphasize, reiterate, even to the students, to the youth. Time and again, we would have heard Swami speak about distinguishing between goodness and greatness.
Right. Yes.
And how, for Swami, it was so important that a person be good, rather than great. As in, for him the fame did not matter, the success did not matter, knowledge, wealth, nothing mattered to Swami as much as your character. And he would say the reason, one of the reasons he pointed out, he said that what lives beyond you,
yes,
beyond, after you die, what stays is just your character, your fame, your reputation in that sense, as to what did you leave,
yeah. What used to
which is of enduring value to the world.
Vayam sthiram, Swami used to say.
Just to be on the same page, how are we defining character? Because like I remember in my fifth standard when I, in the science there was a definition of matter. Anything that occupies space, has weight, is called matter.
Yes.
Now, these are the properties of the matter. You cannot define anything. That's when the science teacher clarified. You define means you can give the property of properties. What you're trying to define. What it is, you would experience it.
Yes.
So similarly, trying to understand what exactly is character, what do we mean, what perspective.
That's a very important point, Brother Ganesh. And I think we'll go back to Swami. Because Swami, very clearly in the fourth paragraph, mentions what are the characteristics which of constitute character.
Okay. Sunil, please. Actually talking about like what do you mean to say, like this is a person of character.
Yes.
And what we're talking about, in if you want a dictionary definition, if you what you're looking for, you'd call it a pattern of behavior, thoughts and feelings which are based on universal principles of moral strength and integrity. You know, so what Bishu is referring to is what qualities now constitute that.
Yes.
Like here, in the dictionary, you'd look at moral strength and integrity. And Swami,
so what is that?
Yeah, the qualities that make up a person who has character.
Yeah. And Swami very clearly mentions that.
Yeah.
And also, Bhagwan mentions about the aspect that you mentioned, something which is lasting.
I see.
I think that also Bhagwan mentions in this fourth paragraph. Sunil, can you please read out paragraph 1.4?
Yeah. Quoting paragraph 1.4, quote, "Character is like a flower that spreads fragrance wherever it may be. One may be a poet or a scholar or a scientist. Without character, there is no place for such an individual in society. One may wonder, do all the popular personalities today have character? Here I am not referring to such a society or character as it is thought in today's times, which is temporary and keeps changing. True character lasts till the end of one's life, nay, end of all ages. And such a permanent quality is ever associated with the Atma. What gives real value and worth to individuals are these immortal qualities like daya, dakshinyam or compassionate even to enemy, prema, chama, nijayati, justness and truthfulness, and patience. These confer greatness on individuals, not otherwise." Unquote.
So very clearly, Swami is, as we were discussing, the characteristics of character. That very clearly Swami says, daya, dakshinyam. Dakshinyam is, again, a superlative form of compassion. You know, when you are equally compassionate even to your enemy. Daya, dakshinyam, prema, kshama, nijayati. Nijayati is justness and truthfulness. Kshama, we know, is forgiveness. And patience. So these are the qualities, Swami says, this is what confers greatness on individuals and not otherwise. But before this, you know what Bhagwan mentions, Swami says that you might wonder that all the people who are popular today, do they have character? I mean, without, if you say that, you know, they do not have these virtues, but they seem to be very popular, they seem to have some reputation, and without these qualities, so what is the motivation for us to follow these virtues?
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on this, brothers?
Well, the first thing that is coming in my mind is, all of us have read that book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And in that, the author, Stephen Covey, says that when he started writing this book, he referred to literature which was lasting like 150 to 200 years literature he reviewed. And what he found in that is that last 150 years, he has coined two terms. One is personality ethic, one is character ethic. So in the last 150 years, the focus was on personality ethics, like how to speak confidently and everything that people see you as.
Well-groomed.
Hmm. But before that, the focus was on qualities, the character ethics like honesty, sincerity, loyalty. That was the, and these values were you know, given importance. If you have these values, that is what he defines as character ethic. And somewhere, because we have been focusing on personality ethic, we have lost the track. So we may say these people are successful. Okay, but again, if you remember, we began with whether they are happy or not. Okay, what true happiness, they may appear to be, you know, very successful. Are they happy? If they will be happy if they have been loyal to, if they have been practicing to this ageless principles and values of loyalty, honesty, sincerity. So that is one thing which is coming in my mind straight away.
Yeah,
what Swami is referring to as, you know, character, the fundamental values.
In fact, absolutely, here Bhagwan is very clearly saying, you might think that these people are popular, but here Swami is saying, I'm not referring to the character the way these people look at, or I'm not referring to the society as you see it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Swami is very clearly saying, because this is not what is true character.
Mm-hmm.
This is something which keeps changing. Character cannot be a thing of fashion. Like today, you know, it's fashionable to be this. So that is now, that is what is hailed as characteristics of a person, personality.
That's what you're mentioning as personality and traits, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Let somebody define what people see you as, that is your personality. But what you really are is your character.
Correct. Wow. I think that's very beautiful.
And also I think Swami is taking a stance that that even if a thing is endorsed by society today, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the good or the right thing.
Correct. Yes.
Like at various points of time, you know, like if you look back in the American society 200 years ago, like say something like burning of witches. It was considered something that was the right thing to do by society. But now, when you look back, it's such a horrific thing.
Yes.
So not everything that is endorsed by society is necessarily right.
And like now you have, they say greed is good, because in this society of consumerism and material, you know, say it's good for the economy.
Yes.
That need not necessarily, as you mentioned, be the...
Because hiding behind all that is a lot of unhappiness, a lot of misery, a lot of sorrow. And Swami is kind of uncovering that, you know, he's uncovering the pretense that we are today and saying like, what are you all people looking at? Ignoring the basic facts of life and calling this as happiness. He's suddenly calling something else as happiness and aspiring to that and saying, look, they've got that.
Correct. Kind of Swami always looks at things on a permanent basis, very rarely on a temporary basis. And maybe just to conclude the session, we should... look at Swami's own life with a simple example where, you know, one of the qualities which Swami says is prema, love, you know, and Swami was the most beautiful embodiment of love that we all have experienced. And my mind goes to that particular experience of Mrs. Geeta Mohan Ram, where, you know, as a child she was playing in the gardens of Vrindavan, she was plucking grass, and you know, Swami would come and admonish her. And then take her to a plant and say, see, everything has life and everything responds to love.
Yes.
And there was a bud which was not blossomed yet.
Yes.
And Swami just touched that bud and in front of her eyes, you know, the flower, the bud blossomed into a beautiful flower.
Yes.
And Swami said, this is possible even for you.
For you.
Why don't you do it? And she touched the bud and nothing happened. Then she looked at Swami, you know, with a question mark. And then Swami held her hand and made her touch the bud again, and that bud too blossomed into a beautiful flower. I think this is a very symbolic, you know, experience, because Swami is saying here, like he has said in his definition of character, he says it is something that is rooted to yourself or Atma, right?
Yes.
Which is permanent in nature. Swami is showing that all these expressions of character, of love, patience, compassion, will happen when you are in contact with God.
Absolutely.
Because when Geeta Mohan Ram tried to touch the bud, nothing happened. But Swami held her hand, which means when you have the touch of God, or when you are in contact with God, then what happens in your life is really a flow of His love, a flow of character in its multifarious ways.
In essence, the core of our character is divinity.
Absolutely.
That we should never
I think
forget.
That very clearly Swami says, character is that which is indelibly connected to the Atma.
To God, to the Self.
To the Atma, Character, if it is connected to the Atma, if it derives everything, all its characteristics from the Atma, then that is character. It does not derive it from society, it does not derive from trends, it does not derive from what different people think about you or what is needed for you to be successful today.
if everything is derived from the Atma, then it is character.
It is self-evident.
That is self. And the other thing, and then as Harishankar said, then it becomes lasting. Swami says it lasts not only till the end of this life, but in the end of yugas. It will be lasting even for ages. I think that's a very, very powerful definition of what is character. And Swami has very clearly also, for our benefit, delineated the virtues that make character. Perhaps in the future sessions, we will try and dwell on these particular virtues. And, you know, Bhagavan also, to help us understand this, he's given certain role models. You know, he has mentioned few personalities, Buddha, Shankaracharya, Vivekananda. Maybe we should look at their lives and try to see how to understand more about this character. And in fact, as this Prema Vahini goes, Swami also very clearly mentions how to cultivate this character. And when can it happen? When alone it can happen? And how to sustain it?
Many of them may be having the question that how do we start? Where do we start?
Yes. And can we do it? I mean, am I capable? Yes. You know, is it only for a Shankaracharya and a Buddha?
Or is it too late?
Is it too late or is it too lofty for us to attain?
I think we should deal with all these questions with Bhagavan's inspiration in the next
session. Future sessions, we will do in the future session. So thank you so much, brothers. So let us end by offering our gratitude to Bhagavan and praying that let everyone, everywhere, come on to this path onward, forward, Godward. Let's end with Samasta Loka, Sukhino Bhavantu.
Samasta Loka, Sukhino Bhavantu. Samasta Loka, Sukhino Bhavantu. Samasta Loka, Sukhino Bhavantu. Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Tune in to Sight. Spend the day with Sight. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Science Thursday Live.
Radio Science Thursday Live. Stay tuned.
Sairam, dear listeners. Coming up next on Thursday Live is the segment Service Love in Action with Raghu. Please stay tuned. Thank you and Sairam.
हे विश्वनाथ हे गौरीनाथ हे साईनाथ भगवान
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 दया करो
Yeah.
दीन दयाला साई घनश्यामा दीन दयाला साई घनश्यामा पतित पावना
साईनाथ भगवान।